At some point, I looked up and realized I'm a streamer. How I got to that position and what it's involved in and the way that I've unintentionally trained my whole life for it is worth discussing. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Eric Vitello, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. As of this recording, I am streaming at twitch.tv/textfiles. I also stream at twitch.tv/sketchthecow, one word. I say as of this recording because I generally don't like to go into contemporary things knowing how transient they are. And you can't ask for anything more transient than a streaming service. The bandwidth costs are astronomical, and whatever company is paying those bills better be able to sustain the costs. And if they can't, it all disappears very, very quickly. The technology to send things, audio or video, via streaming has been around for decades. What's only changed is the amount of average bandwidth your audience might have available, along with technology for compressing this audio and video in a way that makes it easier to transport. My journey with streaming comes from the Winamp days, when the program Shoutcast was created, allowing you to make a playlist of MP3s and other audio files and transmit them at a certain very low bandwidth to anybody who was listening. Suddenly, for very little effort, you could run an actual radio station with inserted files being presented to people as if they were listening to anything that was professional going over the airwaves. This was, and perhaps forgotten now, a sea change in the power structure. Previously, radio stations were, even though static in their technology, almost magical in their ability to broadcast over the air. Anyone who ventured into that area, not as a professional, but broadcasting themselves, found themselves at the mercy of the FCC and enforcement, meaning that whoever did do it produced very saucy, very interesting content. I'm happy to say the Internet Archive has a huge collection of pirate radio stations dating over the last 50 years that you can listen to. But putting a pre-recorded show on the back of a truck with a transmitter and driving around a city is something which only a small number of people could hope to do, and who are willing to take enormous risks to do so. There were opportunities to get on the air, calling into radio stations, being a guest or an employee, and in fact, some of my training made me prepared for that sort of contingency. At Emerson College, I trained as a radio DJ. I was on the AM station and the FM station for a few hours during my college years, so I did understand many of the basic tenets of what made a radio station a radio show. Looking back, the most critical component was time. The professional radio stations would have specific amounts of time that they could broadcast before, by law, they had to identify themselves. This is why you might listen to a one-hour radio mix, but even though there's no commercials, they'll still say the name of the station over the music, because they're required to identify exactly who is broadcasting on a regular basis. Some radio stations had rules where every 5 or 15 minutes they had to give weather or traffic updates to the constantly rotating audiences in their broadcast area. Others had requirements for commercials or how many times they would play certain public service announcements. And when you went to school with a mass communications degree, all of these ideas, all of these rules, were drummed into you as being required, in the same way that somebody studying film would learn about frame composition and light. You had to know how to focus on the microphone, how to speak into it, and how to keep the time in the back of your mind, no matter what you were doing. This bifurcation of both action and memory was the number one thing that I learned during my radio years. Knowing that internally you were going over the 5 minutes allocated for whatever you were speaking about and quickly moving the conversation as smoothly as you could to either a pre-recorded sequence or a record or a new topic. Like flying, like having a car, these rules were ambient. You had to be aware of them. In the same way you would know about red lights and passing lanes, you would know about staying on top of the hour, not allowing any air to go dead while you were broadcasting, and to never, ever say various words, which would actually jeopardize the radio station's license. Probably the most unintuitive aspect of radio that I picked up during those years was how a radio station manager or co-manager would often have the radio station playing all the time in the background, no matter what other work or telephone calls they were doing. Either coming over a speaker in their office, playing in their car driving to work, or even being at their home in off hours, playing the radio station just in case something, anything, went wrong or needed a comment. You knew if a record was skipping, or if you said something strange, or you failed to press the right button, the phone would ring, the special red phone that only the manager had the number to let you know immediately how to course correct and get back on track. All of this came rushing back with Shoutcast. Naturally, unregulated, you could run whatever you wanted to, endless albums, strange MP3s, in whatever order you wanted. But if you were trying to emulate the feeling of a radio station, you knew about timing, approach, and sound engineering. All of this was, of course, a set of pre-recorded files presented by a server. But as time went on and bandwidth became more available, we started to see the addition of streaming services where live interaction could happen. I don't have it in my heart to go into an exacting list of the history of streaming services, which companies rose and fell, which ones offered you music produced live or simply made it seem like they were, or even which of the live blogging or vlogging services started to come into the internet when broadband became the rule rather than the exception for many users. But I will say that my own personal tide turned with the introduction of Justin.tv, where a person named Justin was living life online, streamed in video, with all of the ambience, randomness, dead time, and personal aspects of a life being recorded. It was interesting, compelling, in a weird, prurient fashion. We would watch this person as he lived at home, went to clubs and events, and kept it all running in real time for us to comment on. He did this for years until finally selling the company so that anybody who had an account could stream. Justin.tv, by the way, eventually became Twitch.tv, owned by Amazon and reimagined for gamers, or at least what a team of programmers think gamers would want. It's in that world of Twitch TV that I started experimenting with streaming myself, turning archiving from a solitary and quiet act into a performance, a performative aspect that I thought would make things a little interesting, and also use these long dormant skills that I had picked up 10 or 20 years ago. And while live streaming has many of the same aspects that I remember from radio shows, in other ways, it is notably different, and it requires a skill set that I think is very hard to translate to people. When you're doing live streaming in the modern era, there are multiple forces at work. First, there's a lack of worry about time. That is, if you're broadcasting for 5 or 6 or 7 hours, that's fine. And if those hours turn out to be not well-crafted, you might lose followers, you might get a relatively small audience, but you won't get a station manager calling you on the special phone to tell you that you are doing it wrong. Technology has changed in the world of both audio and video recording. The audio microphones you can buy rival professional microphones from the 1940s and 1950s, and video cameras can go into resolutions and quality of frame rate that you could have only dreamed about at the top Hollywood studios for the last 100 years. The expense has dropped as well. Cameras have dropped in price while increasing in ability. Software, which can drive these items, has gotten much more sophisticated while also adding many different templates so you don't have to spend too much time tweaking on specific choices to make it all function. The reduction in tweaking, however, has increased the amount of time working over creative decisions. What are going to be your angles? How will you light it? How will you provide the information to your audience? And most importantly, how do you integrate it all into a life in which you still wish to be functional in some way? If I chose to live stream at the detriment of everything else, I could do a very, very good show, but I would have very little to show for it outside of the show itself. I wouldn't have the work that I'm doing, the people I'm communicating with, the efforts I'm trying to forward. It would just be something I'd have to push to the side because I would be 100% a performer. Instead, I split my time. I construct it so that what I do is visually interesting while also being functional. I encourage people who are curious to try it. You don't have to have the top flight equipment. You don't have to have the best lighting. Being involved with some sort of audience or collaborators encourages you to come up with thoughts on the fly, keep the different subjects in your head, and continue to focus on what you're doing while also not leaving the people watching you in the cold. It's a juggling of priorities. It's the very same skills I learned working in television in college, where we all had to take a try at being newsroom producers, performers, speakers, camera people, all of these different skills, which, while many of them a field none of us would enter, a set of skills we could use in so many other ways. For me, at this point, my streaming is for two main reasons. The first is performing, providing people with an image of these processes and jobs that I do so that they feel connected to it. And the other is to encourage communication, to make myself available to people who might not communicate with me other ways, to pop into a chat window and ask a few questions and inspire me to think about it. This happens all the time for me now. I will happily have a one-hour phone call with somebody going over a concept, an idea, a speculation, because if I let it sit inside, it literally festers. It gains its own strength and power completely at odds with its actual usefulness. By being able to express it to one person, to an audience, I'm forcing myself into a structure of thought that I think everybody benefits from. In our life, we collide with a series of choices and judgments that we have to make. And I do believe that practice does make perfect. If you are forced in real time to confront how you look at things, I like to think that it makes you come to a better conclusion. It's a conclusion made publicly in the world from debate or at least discussion. Opinions I have held firm on for years have shifted during streaming as I'm forced to really confront where my conclusions came from and whether or not they still hold up or are valid. People inform me of news and events in real time, and I have to react to them as a person who didn't know anything about the subject seconds before. Harassers come, trolls stop by, but learning how to deal with them is another important tool in the toolbox as well. And for this moment in time, while learning all of the tools and techniques of live streaming as it currently presents itself, I am doing what I think is one of the most important things that one can do in life. Learn, engage, evolve, and improve. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Eric Vitello, James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Peter Healy, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Manxalot, Sean Kelly, John Sturm, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. As I said, I am currently at twitch.tv/textfiles, as well as twitch.tv/sketchthecow when I'm playing video games. I don't know how long I'll be doing it, when my life will shift in priorities and find me in a different realm of something that I have to try and learn about. But I've become very comfortable with learning how to appreciate every day and the things that come before us, understanding them, and sharing what we learned. So in some ways, I think I'll be streaming forever.